But it's not with respect to the property tax deferral. We removed that annual filing requirement so that they're the same. Some other specific provisions not related to requiring identical eligibility criteria is to make deferred taxes payable when a mobile or floating home is moved out of state. It's a concern over over collection when you've got a piece of property with a lien on it that's kind of mobile. Fourth, I'm just going over the outline that's in your revenue analysis in your books. It voids any prohibition against deferral in any mortgage or land sale contract. And it specifically authorizes a lien foreclosure on delinquent special assessment deferrals. Currently, you have, again, it's another one that's not eligibility requirement, but to treat the lien provisions the same in the special assessment deferral as in the property tax deferral system. So it's in form of a housekeeping bill. When the bill was heard, I think most of the questions or discussions were with respect to making the deferred taxes payable on the mobile or floating home, and maybe that's the most significant policy question in the underlying bill. The amendments before you are a major policy change in how special assessment deferrals are handled. The amendments before you, presented by the City of Portland, require that the state pick up the entire deferral amount rather than the Red Bancroft amount. And they give you, currently, special assessment comes in and it's bankrupted. It's over many cases a 15 or 20 year period. And so the deferral system is coming in and picking up that Bancroft payment, which is many cases semi-annual or annual payments. And if we come in with a special assessment of $10,000, that annual payment may be $700. And so the deferral system is picking up that $700 payment, and then there's a 6% interest that accrues to that payment each time. What this provision is to do is basically for the state to pick up front the entire deferral and then turn around and charge the Bancroft interest rate. And so rather than the property tax owner go out, in effect, borrowing the money through the Bancroft bond, paying an interest on that, then deferring the payments and paying an interest on that. There's kind of two interests here. One on the Bancrofting, which may be currently somewhere 10 to 13%. Then those payments include that interest rate, and then the payments the deferral amounts accrue an interest rate to them. So you've got kind of a double interest rate there. I mean, it's not perfectly additive, but there are two interest rates there with respect to that deferred special assessment that is Bancroft bond. What this provision, the amendments before you, would simply, not so simply maybe, but that would require that the deferral system come in and pick up the whole $10,000 special assessment, pay it off, and then interest would accrue to the taxpayer at what the going Bancroft bond rate was. So you wouldn't have the monthly payment, the semi-annual annual payments being made by deferral. The deferral system would pick up the entire amount. And so the proposing would better sure make the arguments of a lower cost to the individual making in the deferral program, because they don't have to pay that sort of double interest rate. Be aware that you are picking that money up front. Remember, that revolving fund appropriation was going to have to be sufficient to pick up the front end cost on those deferred amounts. And I guess I think that's the sort of policy trade-off. And that, I mean, you save some money to the individuals who are deferring their special assessment programs. You are doing that by increasing the amount of money necessary to fund the program in the short term. In the long term, when this gets rolling through that revolving fund, it will tend to decrease additional cost into the general fund. At the outset, I'm trying to sort of simplify the policy decision, but it would seem to me that it's a matter of the general fund picking up that Bancroft bond, but not the whole bond, but that portion of it that's being deferred, that senior citizen program, picking up upfront and earning the Bancroft bond interest rate rather than the 6%. So,
how much, Mr. Chairman?
Representative Burroughs?
How much, what would be the impact on initial?
That worked with the Department of Revenue, and I believe in your documents is a memo. Maybe quick check here from from Ron Olivera to Senator Otto, and I think you referenced me. Ron and I had worked on this estimate, and it as our best guess with some heroic assumptions, because one thing we don't know how fast some of these special assessments are growing, because again, remember the trend is for an increase, particularly in the urban areas, going to special assessments as forms of funding improvements. It looks like something on the order of $1 million per year for the first couple of years. Something on the order of $2 million, but there's some heroic assumptions in that our potential error there is rather large. But it is something on the order of $2 million additional. And one of the reasons for that is that you have a wide range of special, we have examples in the senior deferral program of special assessments of $279,000. And so I'm saying is there are at times some very large amounts of special assessments, and you can see the impetus. I mean, when you got a big, large special assessment, that increases the impetus for the individual if they qualify to be in the deferral program. So you tend to have people with large special assessments are pushed towards the deferral program simply because the payment's so large.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chairman.
Senator Burroughs?
I'm just looking, $79,000 assessment for one piece of property that has a true cash value of $69,000. Use that as an argument to discuss this whole issue of assessments maybe during the interim. I realize somebody has to pay for it. That's ludicrous.
Terry, I think we discussed this during 1983, but I'd like to revisit the question just for a moment. How does an economist such as yourself define a hero assumption?
Oh, heroic. I say that we're having to make some estimates here for which we don't have any historical information, and then we're having to project into the future without much knowledge of the past, and so I'm saying is that we're fearful that our potential error here is much higher than in some of our normal estimates, where of course there's already a potential for error, but it's a very difficult estimate. This is our best shot at it, and you've had more, and I worked closely with the Department of Revenue on coming up with the estimate, and we think we try to give it our best shot.
Sam Hugo? Terry, in making your estimate, did you adopt the $5,000 limit that's suggested by Mr. Short?
No.
You're just open-ended it.
Right.
What would your estimate be if we cut a $5,000 lid?
I don't have that. That will bring it down a significant amount, and I simply don't have that number for you.
Let me get that.
Terry, would you also briefly preview the letter that we have before us on Possible 2170 also, please?
I'm sorry, which I can letter I haven't seen, I'm sorry. Okay. I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman, I just had not seen this letter. There's the letter before you from Norma Euler, or the letter that I'm looking at, you have a question that's been an individual will set up a trust for their heirs, and there are conditions in the current program, depending on the type of trust that's set up, that can exclude individuals from the senior deferral program because the way that trust is set up, from the interpretation of the eligibility and on the ownership of the property, that the technical ownership is with respect to the heirs and not the individual. So you do have certain types of trusts that exclude an individual from eligibility. And the reason they set up that trust in many cases is to minimize the cost of handling the estate when that person dies. Or in some cases, it has it's set up to avoid or to decrease some tax liabilities on transferring the assets. Chairman, that's all I know about that. I can't give you the specific definitions of the types of trusts that get people into this type of trouble, but there's a term here, there's a legal term that I just don't identify.
What is Mrs. Euler suggesting?
I suspect that they're simply asking that those types of relationships where there is a trust set up, that they still be allowed to be eligible for the deferral program.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Welcome.
I really have been staying here with my sleeping bag.
We finally got to it.
Yes, thank you. Would you like to ask me the
question? Would you introduce yourself for the record, please, and then...
Norma Euler, 21175 Southwest Pacific Highway in Sherwood, Oregon.
We have a letter here from you.
Yes.
And what I'd like to ask you to do, first of all, is to state the problem as you see it that you're concerned about. And number two, state the solution as you see it.
Okay. The problem specifically is that my mother's property, under the present law, can be deferred property taxes. She has just been hit with a $12,000 special assessment fee, which, because it is an irrevocable trust, cannot be deferred. The solution for me... It really is House Bill 2170 making those requirements equal. My options, I realize I do have other options. One is to simply have her revoke the trust, which presents, a difficult situation should she become ill and then nothing can be done, which the trust allows can be done. The present law allows deferred tax, or the special assessment taxes, to be deferred in guardianships and conservatorships, but not the revocable trust, and that doesn't make a great deal of sense to me. That's what I'm fighting.
Okay. Terry, which basically 2170 solves by, and I'm looking at the language right now on page 3 of the bill. If you look at lines 17 through 20. It states that this irrevocable trust, if it is created and is revocable by the taxpayer, is both the trust and beneficiary, who is otherwise qualified to obtain deferral, shall be qualified for the program.
So, for the record, you support the bill as it's currently written, and you don't have an amendment that you wish to make. You're satisfied with the language that's on page 3 that Mr. Drake referred to.
In the portion that I'm interested in, yeah.
Are there questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yes, we have two decisions. The first decision, is the committee interested in doing anything with the City of Portland amendments? And the second, is the committee interested in doing anything with the bill?
Mr. Chairman.
Discussion on the City of Portland amendments. Representative Hugo?
I have the letter from the City of Portland and the memo from Fiscal and letter from Revit. I don't have amendments. I didn't look.
They're on their way.
Are amendments written?
They are on their way. Well, conceptually, with a $5,000 limit on the special assessment, I would be inclined to support it. I think... Terry is obviously shooting in the dark on numbers, but his shooting in the dark is based on no limit at all, and it's coming up with $2 to $3 million. Is that
$2 million? $2 million per biennium for 85-87.
And with a $5,000 lid, that would wipe out the $279,000 individual special assessment occurrence. So that impact's got to be.
It would be significantly reduced, and I didn't know you were going to consider the 5,000 limit today, or I would have tried to have some numbers for you. I can have them in short order.
And my second observation is that, according to the revenue memo, Senate Bill 5564 has $28 million for the general deferral. I don't find any reference to any appropriation bill for special assessment.
It's a single appropriation.
So that $28 million includes something for this?
Right.
Representative Trahern?
Mr. Chairman, I guess I have a real concern, just heard from Ms. Weller, about the $12,000 assessment. I think that's not too awfully unusual. If we start looking at an elimination of five, I think we're going to be locking out some of those very people that probably most need the referral. On the other hand, if you look at the upfront payment that the city board has suggested, if you take that limit off, I think that could do real damage perhaps to the to our fund program, because I don't think we've got that kind of dollar. So personally, I'm just not really interested in City Portland's proposal.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Hostica.
Yes, I have a little difficulty with City of Portland's proposal from the perspective of the memos talk about 100 accounts a year, yet the City of Portland raises the issue that this would become especially important if there's has to be sewers put into Multnomah County because of some DEQ thing, and it would be, I guess, my fear that if that started happening, this, the number of accounts would start to skyrocket. And if the state becomes the upfront Bancroft bond holder, we're going to have a lot of money involved, even with the $5,000 limit. So I think we should proceed very cautiously into this area.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Hugo?
I tend to agree that we may be talking about a decision here with an open end, much like a 30% PTR. Although the limits that are here are not only $5,000, it's also 62 years of age and a 17.5 income. Mm-hmm. So it wouldn't apply to that whole genre.
It would apply to all the people in who
qualify. I'm not anxious to go into an open-ended assignment with closed-end resources, though.
Terry, may I ask a question? Would you elaborate on the committee report or analysis? Would you elaborate on number four?
Okay, number four is that we're talking now about the existing underlying bill as printed. The void, there's simply language in the bill that says that if after the effective date of the act, if there is any, it voids any prohibition in a mortgage or land sale contract against deferral. What's happened is there have been people concerned about protecting their equity in the property, the person that's selling a property on some mortgage or land sale contract, and putting in that sale contract a provision saying the individual cannot defer the taxes on this particular piece of property. And what this simply says is that you can't do that anymore.
Right. Representative
Trahern? Isn't that the case now with the tax? In other words, they can't put that in the contract, but they still can put the special deferral prohibition.
Right. And we're stopping that. So it's part of that. It's part of the program to make the not only qualification requirements, but the limit, but other requirements between property tax deferral and special assessment deferral the same.
Is there anyone in the audience from the City of Portland? Please come forward. You want to attempt to retrieve something that looks like maybe on the verge of being lost?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Casey Short with the City of Portland Bureau of Environmental Services. As I noted in my letter, the principal purpose that the city has in introducing such an amendment to have the state upfront the costs of Bancroft bond special assessments was in response to concerns that we've had from citizens in the city and in the environs that the 6% charge that the state charges on top of the Bancroft bond charge places an additional burden on people who, based on the qualification criteria, don't have a lot of money to deal with in the first place, and they fear that they're going to lose whatever equity they have in their homes. Our point in proposing these amendments was to try and eliminate the 6% charge and yet not have the state general fund suffer from not recovering any interest on its investments that it makes in this area. What we hit upon was this idea of the state fronting the money, because then in the long term, the state would recover a higher interest rate. I proposed the $5,000 limit because, as Kenneth Jones from Legislative Fiscal indicated, the majority of participants in the senior citizen deferral program, the assessments there have a total value of less than $4,000 on average. That would be about the same amount that we anticipate would occur in Multnomah County if and when we start putting sewers in there. I can't speak to some of the larger assessments because in our area we don't anticipate having those large assessments. I would personally favor putting the limit on the upfront assessments and still continuing the Bancroft bond, the semi-annual payments for those over $5,000.
Okay. Any suggestion on where the legislature ought to capture that money? Is there a certain state funding that goes to the city of Portland that we might be able to reduce a commensurate amount in order to backfill a program and fund this? Or do you have any other suggestions on how that might be accomplished?
No, I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman, I don't.
Discussion? Questions? Thank you.
Thank you.
We're now at the decision point on the City of Portland amendments, yay or nay, decision point on House Bill 2170 itself. Terry, are there any other proposed amendments that have been made by anybody else, the staff, or rather the executive or legislative branch, noted any glitches in the bill?
Not that I'm aware of.
If we could go to there, I think I've got a little note from the original bill. Yes, this is a strictly technical amendment. On the printed bill on page 3, line 14, there must be no prohibition to the deferral of, and that says property taxes. That should say language, something said, special assessments, because what we did was, this part of that, make sure you got the same requirements in the property tax deferral versus special assessment deferral, but when they brought it over, we made it a little too close.
Okay, so delete property taxes on line 14 and insert special assessments.
Right.
Okay, Chair will move that amendment. Is there an objection? So ordered. Jim Burrows?
My tea leaves tell me that is probably the only amendment that will pass. It looks like it's basically a housekeeping bill, and I'm willing to, I would like to move House Bill 2170 to the floor as amended.
Representative Burroughs moves House Bill 2170 to the floor as amended with a do pass recommendation. Is there discussion? Representative Trahern?
Chair, I still have one concern with the bill.
Okay.
And that relates to page 5, lines 14 and 15. The bill requires that these deferred special assessments be paid when a mobile or floating home is moved out of state. It's my opinion that generally those special assessments are on the land, not on the mobile home generally that's sitting on that land. And I question whether we need to require that payment just because the mobile home happens to be sold and moved away, when in fact the land that generally speaking the special assessment's on is still there.
Department of Revenue?
Mr. Chairman?
Jim Burroughs?
But isn't the whole point that it be a homestead? If there's no home on it, it's no longer a homestead.
No, Mr. Chair.
Department of Revenue, don't everybody scramble forward at once. Jim Trahern?
Response to Mr. Burroughs' question, what happens in the situation where they change mobile homes? They move a new one on to the property that they're living on. Take the old one off and sold, moved out of state, whatever.
That's not the example I heard the first time.
So I live in Ontario. I've got a small piece of ground. I'm deferring an assessment on a sewer or something like that.
It's your homestead.
Come in, it's my homestead. I moved the mobile home across the border into Idaho and sell it to a friend over there and buy myself a new fancy double wide. Do I have to pay off the special assessment?
That's according to this bill you have.
Mr. Chair, it's Bob Pipkin again. Here again, this provision on line 14, 15 of page 5 is our attempt to align the qualifications of both programs. If it causes a problem, generally speaking, the land would probably be sufficient collateral to cover that special assessment. But if it's a big deal or a big problem, it's not a problem to us. If you want to take that out.
Mr. Chair.
Captain Treher?
I think the difference between the special assessment and property tax is that the property tax, in fact, is assessed against that mobile home or floating home. And certainly in the property tax deferral area, it's logical to say that those taxes should be paid if it's... But I don't see doing the same thing in the special assessment area necessarily.
Mr. Chairman, may I ask...
Representative Burroughs?
What about the floating home portion, George?
Well, question of Department of Revenue, do we have any special assessments on floating homes?
Mr. Chair, Representative Treherne, yes, we do. Several in Portland area, large floating homes, $50,000, $60,000 floating homes.
What kind of special assessment?
What's a special assessment?
I can't think of any right now that would apply to the floating home. Like I say, we just picked this language out of the property tax law to try to cover all the bases, and maybe we covered them too well.
Representative Treherne, would you like to... Well, first of all, Representative Burroughs, could I ask you to withdraw your motion just for
sure.
A moment? Representative Burroughs withdraws her motion. Representative Treherne, would you like to make a motion to delete lines 14 and 15 on page 5?
I so move, Chairman.
Okay. Discussion? Is there an objection?
I object. I
Representative Burroughs?
We want to have the statute be the same for assessments and special assessments and property taxes. And I think, you know, you could have a floating home moved across the river. I understand George's concern in terms, this is if a mobile home is moved out of the state. You want to change the language so it changes the use for the property on the mobile home, but I can see, I just didn't leave floating homes in there for sure, and I'm not so sure about the other.
I guess my position is I haven't, after this discussion, seen a demonstrated need for floating homes being in the bill, and believe that the mobile home provision is not good policy. I would support the deletion. Further discussion? Tilda, would you please call the roll on the motion to amend to delete lines 14 and 15, page 5, please?
Representatives Hostica?
No.
Hugo?
Aye.
McCracken?
Aye.
Schoon?
Aye.
Treherne?
Aye.
Kaluri?
Aye.
Hanlon?
Aye.
Burroughs?
No.
True.
Aye. Motion's adopted.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Burroughs?
I went again, Council 2172 to the floor with a due pass recommendation as amended.
Representative Burroughs moves House Bill 2170 to the floor with a due pass recommendation as amended. Is there discussion? Clerk, please call the roll on the motion.
Representatives Hugo?
Aye.
McCracken?
Aye.
Schoon?
Aye.
Treherne?
Aye.
Cleary?
Aye.
Hanlon?
Aye.
Hostica?
Aye.
Burroughs?
Aye.
True.
Aye. Motion's adopted. We did not adopt the City of Portland recommended amendments, but I would like to throw that into the interim committee discussion and have us take a very close look at it during the interim. We do have a joint committee during the interim that's made up generally of 9 representatives and 7 senators. We meet 2 days a month, and we prepare legislation for 85. As I read the committee today, I think we are uncomfortable making that decision in this bill today. But I think it's a topic that we ought to look at in the interim and consider for 87. So unfortunately, we weren't able to come to any decision on that today, but we will look at it in the interim and hopefully be prepared to do something that might be more satisfactory to you in 87.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Scone.
Just to let Representative Burroughs know that her intuition was maybe correct on the floating home. We made a loan on a
on a floating home and went down there to check our collateral about a year later, and there was nothing there but the ponton that it should be sitting on. So things can happen.
How much collateral did that
ponton? That was a pretty big loan. It looked like a ponton on the other end.
Mr. Chairman.
Secretary.
I'm not sure whether I should ask if it's Coon or not, but they had the same problem with mobile homes that probably occasionally because they suspected you.
The next bill before us is Senate Bill 181, and we did not move forward with Senate Bill 181 last time we had it up for work session because Representative Traeger wanted to look at a potential amendment. This was the bill, wasn't it?
Yes.
First of all, Steve, would you tell us, number one, what would be accomplished in the original bill if we passed it? Secondly, could you articulate Representative Traeger's concern and if you have an amendment drafted for consideration to reflect that presented, and then let's move into decision making. Steve?
Okay, the first part of the bill in Section 2 deals with the Department of Revenue being able to accept payment for delinquent taxes using credit cards. The second section of the bill, section